Welcome to the Tai Chi Podcast with Kai Brooks. It's my great pleasure to be here with Torben Riff. Torben, would you please introduce yourself?
I'm from Denmark. I live in a small town called Jelling near Vejle. Is more or less in the center of Denmark. I'm currently a full-time Tai Chi instructor. I'm the founder and the chief instructor of Practical Tai Chi Trunk Denmark, and which main style is the Wudang Tai Chi Trunk from Jing Ting Hong. I've been doing martial art for almost 25 years, whereas the last 18 to 19 years, it's been Tai Chi, has been the main style. And for the last 16 years, I've been teaching this style. And for now, it's, the last 10 years is full time.
Right. Can you please describe this style of Wudang Tai Chi?
Well, as the other Tai Chi styles, we have the hand form, a series of movements which is done slowly or sometimes fast, but mainly slowly. And we have the Qigong exercises, we have the Tui Shou, the pushing hands, partner exercises, we have the self-defense, and we have the weapons. So mainly the whole, the five aspects of Tai Chi.
And where do you teach now?
I teach mainly in Denmark, but I travel during the year. I'm doing seminars around Europe, but mainly nowadays it's in Denmark. Before I did more in Germany, in Holland, in Belgium, but now I'm doing in Paris. For example, I'm in Paris at least once a year.
So teaching around Europe,
yeah,
is that at in different clubs, or how is that organized?
Well, it is my teacher Dan Doherty, is actually his student in Paris, who invite me to come and do seminars once in a while, and it's mainly pushing hands to show, but. Again, it's also the forms, the hand form, the weapons, but it's mainly my teacher's students.
Right, so this is taught to Tai Chi students. Now, I heard that you also teach Tai Chi to businesses.
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, for the last 10 years, I've been going to businesses to teach Tai Chi, Qigong, as exercises. And normally it's like they have a big seminar, and I'm coming and do the morning exercises one of these days. But then it changed, and nowadays I go to businesses and doing lectures how they can use the Tai Chi strategy to, for example, to improve communication, to reach their goals. To improve things in the company. For example, the pushing hands exercises. It's about listening. If you want to overcome, if you want to win against opponent which is bigger and stronger than you, you need to use his force against himself. So, in order to do that, you need to listen. To listen and react on what's going on. The communication in businesses, in companies, in private life is often when you have discussions, you're not listening. Usually, well, we all have been in this situation where you are sitting talking with somebody, and actually while he's talking to you, you are thinking of what you are going to say after that. Right? Okay, so you're not listening. If you do that in pushing hands, or if you do that in fighting, you get beaten by the stronger one. So actually, so I talk about these strategies, and they, yeah, they can see, I can see them nodding their head and saying, yeah. And then I show them, and then they have to try it. So they actually, I teach them the pushing hands exercises, and then they have to do it to make it work. And often you see, when they come up and do the, for example, fixed step free pushing hands, they go into fighting. They want to win. Isn't that sometimes in a conversation, when you discuss something, you actually want to win? Many times you want to win this discussion instead of reaching the best solution. So if instead of having the goal to win the discussion, it should be the goal should be reaching the best solution, right? And in order to do that, you need to listen. So that's what I do in the companies, and with great success. Must say, with great success, it really works. And after that, the comments are, aha, yeah, you're right. And then I say, yeah, but you knew that. Yeah, but now, actually, I really can see it actually works. So one of the things when I'm finished, when I have about 1.5 hour, 2 hours, or half day, or whole day with the companies, they say, oh, I asked them, so are you going to change something from today? Yes. What? I want to listen more. And that's a big step. But then it's funny, then I ask them, how are you going to do that? Yeah, they say, by listening. Yeah, but how and when do you start? Now? Okay. How are you going to do it? And they look like a question mark. What do you mean? Yeah, do you have a plan? Well, if you don't have a plan, it's not going to work. It will take 1, 2, or 3 days, and then you're back to what you used to do. So if you want to listen more, even though it's just listening more, you need to have a plan. So how are you going to do it? Tomorrow, the next day, the next day, the next day. Have a plan, make a plan, make it work.
Very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's also very interesting that you have these business people both physically participating as well as having this sitting and listening to the lecture.
Yeah, because a lot of times when they go to seminars like that, they're just sitting on the chair and listening to things they have heard before.
And it's very easy to switch off.
But now they're actually going to try it. And they're going to try it in a way which they had never done before.
Right. Going back to the school, do you teach the martial aspects of Tai Chi?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, well, in most Tai Chi schools, the main part is the hand form and the qigong, because that's what people want. That's one of the things we have, which the other martial arts don't have. The other martial arts have also fighting, self-defense, and the martial aspect, but they don't have the soft part, which we have. So, of course, the main part of my students and everybody else's student is the one who wants the soft part. But actually, we focus a lot on the martial aspects, the application from the hand form, really to explain what it is they're doing. Because if the student don't understand why and what they're doing when they do the slow movements, it will change. The form will change and they will do it differently. So they say, so all the time I explain why the hand should be there, why the arm should be that height, and so on. So and that's both in hand form and in weapons. Definitely, we spend a lot of time on the martial aspects.
So, really, you think that it's really vital, even if they're not particularly interested in the martial aspects. Of course, some are, but I would change the actual movement, the quality of the movement, as well as the understanding.
Yeah, That a lot of my students, when they come, actually they don't care about understanding it. Well, they want the soft movement, they want the relaxing part, and they don't care about understanding. But with the instructors I have, they need to know. The instructors I educate, they need to know, and very precise. They need to know the background, they need to know what each movement are. Yeah. If the other students, the normal students, don't want to concentrate or focus on that, that's fine. That's fine.
How would you describe your teaching style? Is it similar to that of your teacher, Dan Doherty?
In many ways, yes. Actually, I found myself doing movements while I'm teaching, or the way I teach, the way I speak. I could hear my teacher's words, I could hear him talk. And my students and some students from Paris, they said, I could hear Dan talk when you were saying that. Yeah, of course. And then again, of course there are differences. There are. Exactly what they are, maybe you should ask my students, which have seen and been on seminars with Dan and me, but it's very, I go very into details, very into explaining why we're doing this. I guess it's very, many ways it's similar to what he's doing. But then again, I spend a lot of time on details and talking to people, and if it doesn't work the first time, I explain them again. And when I show an application, that's one of the things. Many times my teacher, he show this one or two times. Two times on each side, that's it, do it. Well, I guess sometimes I show it 8 or 10 times on each side, and explaining again and again and again and again. And is there one better than the other? I don't know. Ask the students. But I like to make it very clear. The one thing is that an instructor, you should be careful that you're not teaching so little so the students is standing there and don't know what to do after, because then he's feeling stupid, because I couldn't figure it out, I couldn't remember it, right? On the other hand, you shouldn't teach them 20 times so they're standing there and thinking, well, does he think I'm stupid? So it's kind of finding the balance there between explaining too little or too much, finding the way there.
And if I understand it, by finding that path in the middle, you would also like to encourage him to think a little bit for himself, although obviously under your guidance.
Yeah. For example, if they do partner exercises, I just show them an application or something, and they go out and practice. If I see them doing it wrong, or they can't find out when they're standing there, I don't go there to them right away. I wait and see them. If they can figure it out by themselves, that would be the best. So I wait and see. If they can't figure it out, then I go. If not, well, they found out.
What kind of relationship do you have with your students?
Well, I'm very friendly and relaxed, but then again, nobody is... everybody knows who's the Sifu. Everybody knows who's the teacher there, the chief instructor. There's no doubt. But it is very friendly. It is very relaxed. Yeah.
You hold summer camps in Denmark. What are they like?
It's the one thing that most of my students look forward to. Because it's 5 days focused, concentrated, only on Tai Chi. And I went to my teacher's summer camps since I think the first one was in 95 in Sweden. I'm not sure. I think it was around there, 95, 96. And the first camp I on with Dan was the best summer camp I ever discovered, ever experienced. It was number one. It was 7 days and was the best. When we do the summer camps in Denmark, it's 5 days, and we're not starting at 10 o'clock. No, we start at 7. Volunteering. There's two groups. One is doing Qigong, the other is doing Neigong apart in another place. And I'm doing the Neigong with the experienced ones, and some of the other instructors are teaching the Qigong in the morning class, 1 hour. And then we go to breakfast, and then the normal class is going on until 6 o'clock in the evening. So actually, it's from 7 to 6 for 4 days, and then the last day is a half day.
It's really a long day.
It's long training. Days, but it's changing a lot during the day, what we're doing. And they are coming to the summer camp because I'm teaching, and because it's 4.5 days, right? But on the first day, I'll tell you, I'm not teaching. My instructors, my students will teach. So it could be that for the Qigong or for warm-up exercises, I ask one of the students, go out and teach and explain and so on. And then we split up to groups where we do a hand form or weapons, 4 or 5 groups, and each group has one instructor at their level where they're teaching. For example, if I have an instructor who wants level 1, he's teaching level 1 exercises of form, hand form, square form in that corner. If I have one who wants to be level 4, I have him teaching the group with the long form or saber, and so on.
So you've mentioned that instructors are going to be quite involved in this, in teaching when they're trying to get certified. Could you talk some more about instructor training and certification? Because I know that you're quite rigorous about this aspect in your organization.
Yeah. Well, Dan started with 5 levels back when we did the first summer camps, yeah, in 95. But then he expanded it to 9 levels. And that's the levels that which I giving the certificate after. So actually I built it on these levels. The thing is that if the student wants to be an instructor in practical Tai Chi Chuan Denmark, you need to pass the exam. You really need to show me that you can teach it, not just know how to do it, but I want you to teach it, right? And then I'm going to ask, what is it good for? It's good for this and this is it. Okay, why? And they look like question marks sometimes. Yeah, I know that you know it's good for that, but I want to know if you know why it's good for that. So instead of remembering things just by learning,
right.
Yeah, I want to learn them to look at the exercises, find out, analyze why is it good for this and this and this and this. Okay. The other thing is that they have to answer 10 written questions to each level. So if you want level 5, you have 50 written questions you have to answer. So it's what I saw in the other martial art I did before I started Tai Chi was one time instructor, then you're instructor for the rest of your life. Is it good or bad? Yeah, for some it's no problem because they have their self-respect and the focus that they continue to keep that level, but a lot of times the level is going down. So what I made in the organization in Denmark is that if you get level 4, then you have to pass the exam within 2 years. You have to pass it again. Otherwise, I'm going to take the level 4 from you again, and you're down to level 3. So that means that it high demands give high quality. And sometimes, but can you do that? Do you think that's okay? Yeah, I think. And you know what? The instructor and them, they like it. They like it because they know when they get level 4, they really are level 4. Not, I've seen around Europe, I've seen some which are at a level or had a certificate in a level which, you know, they're not there. So it's not worth it. That it's not worth the paper it's written on. I'm sorry.
So at least you'll be sure that anybody instructing in your organization really deserves to have a thorough understanding of what they're teaching and are able to show and demonstrate it clearly as well as the theoretical.
And I cannot stop anybody from going out to teaching. I've seen people after weekend seminar, they go out and teach, and they're doing that. But what I can say, if you are a member in my organization and you want to teach there, you need to do this and this and this. You need to pass the exam. You need to show me that what you can do. And it's not only me, because we have a technical panel, we have a board in the organization, and we're really going into that with the rules and they like it.
Excellent. What was your early training like?
Compared to now, it's quite different. When I started martial art, it was because I have always loved martial art, fighting. I was a huge fan of Bruce Lee, and but at that time it was my hobby. It was my hobby. When I finished working, I was practicing 2, 3, 4 hours. That was the thing, right? Now I don't have a hobby anymore. It has become my work, and it's been it for many years. So in that way, it's quite different. Even though I loved doing it before, I did it because I couldn't help it. I just want to do it. I didn't have to do it. Nowadays, because I'm professional, I have to train. I know I love to do it. I know I want to do it. But there is this, if you don't do it, the level is going down. It's going to affect the organization. It's going to affect that. It's going to affect that. So I put myself in a situation where I have to go out and train. That's good. And sometimes it is
a little pressure.
Yeah, it is a little pressure. Yeah, it is. But I will never, this is what I do, this is what I love. I could never imagine a better world for me.
Have you used your martial arts skills in self-defense situations or other challenges?
No, I never had to use it for self-defense, never. I always managed to talk me out of it, always, all around. Sometimes I think, wow, that could be interesting to see if you really could use it. Or if it doesn't work. But no, if I can feel there's something going on, and I go.
Using your listening.
Yeah, I use my listening and walk. I used it in competition. Before I started Tai Chi, I did some Chinese American kickboxing, had some kickboxing fight, had some full contact and that kind of thing. But in my Tai Chi career, I have done a lot of pushing hands competition. It's not fighting, but it's a kind of wrestling and with the balance. And you can use a lot of the skills from close quarter fighting. So, I've been competing a lot in pushing hands.
So competing, but resolving bad situations amicably.
Yeah.
How do you think Tai Chi is developing nowadays?
After what I see, again, the martial aspects are lacking in many styles. I think actually in some styles it's getting more, it's coming back because they can. And I think one of the main reasons actually my teacher, our teacher, because he took the to Europe in our style and began teaching this martial aspect, and the other stylists can see, so he's getting a lot of students, it's going better, he's winning the competition. So I think he's one of the reasons why the other styles are taking more and more interest in the martial aspects. But if you see different places, you can see when they're doing the form, you can see that they don't know what they're doing. Maybe it's good for health. Maybe it's they're soft, it's nice, and they get the benefit from health, and it's fine. And if they like what they're doing, it's fine. But you can see they don't understand what they are doing. And this development, if we don't have instructors who wants to teach the martial aspect, who wants to understand it, then it will disappear. But then it won't, because we are here.
And in terms of popularity, do you see more people practicing Tai Chi than previously, or less? What's your gut feeling?
In Denmark, it's getting more and more. Yeah, we can feel that in the organization. It's getting bigger and bigger. Yeah, and we have 9 clubs in Denmark now, and in several of them, actually, they take new students in twice a year, and between these times there's no room for more, it's filled up. So yeah, it's getting more and more.
Wow. Does your school, our school, have any special methods of practice, for example Neigong?
Yeah, we have the 24 Neigong exercises, the internal strength exercises, and that was probably one of the reasons that I chose this style. After doing other martial arts for 7 or 8 years, I came to a lesson in Tai Chi, and this guy, he was doing a demonstration where he was lying on the floor, and this guy climbed up in nearly 2 meters height and then jumped down on his stomach. And without this guy lying on the floor, without him tensing the muscles. And I thought, they have something here which I want to learn. I've done martial art for 7 or 8 years. I trained a lot of sit-ups and like that. I wouldn't do that. So I thought, okay, they have something here. And I like the idea of the way the Neigong exercises are practiced and used. I know that, I was focused on be able to do that. I want to learn the Neigong. I want to do this demonstration. I want to be able to do to train my body to do it. But mainly, the people who are learning these exercises are focusing on the health part. And I have not trained any exercises who are as strong as these health measures, right? For the tendons, for the joint, for the muscles, for the internal organs, for the mental. So these are actually, when my students ask, I call them the gold. This is the diamonds or the gold
standard
in our system. This is the most important thing.
Oh, the gold. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have to choose one day what to practice. Practice Neigong first, and then do the form, then do the weapons. These are the most important things.
And for anybody listening, I would just like to make it very clear, we're definitely suggesting that unless you have proper teaching and supervision, do not attempt to have people jump on your stomach from a height. It's not
no.
something to be attempted lightly.
Well, there's actually some who are dead of these demonstrations. Well, you have to look at the teacher, or you have to look at how they were practicing. Even though they had a good teacher, maybe they didn't do the work, maybe they didn't practice. If they had a bad teacher and who were just selling the exercises, they're not expensive, in my opinion, but you have to pay some money to learn these exercises. Yeah, you just be very careful to choose the teacher. And, well, see if he can do the jump, see if he can do this demonstration. And if he can, ask him if any of his students have done the demonstration. If not, maybe you're the first. Maybe it won't work. One thing is that he can do it. Another thing is if he can teach the exercises properly, so it is going to work. So yeah, you should be careful of choosing
yeah.
it. The thing is that was one of my goals early on, that I want the permission from my teacher to teach Qigong. That was the goal, right? I know that several of dance students are teaching Qigong without the permission. They're doing the Bai Shi, which is the ceremony to get inside the door to learn these exercises. There's several teaching it, but I wanted to have the permission from him before I go out and teach it. Yeah. And I got it.
Yeah, and just to emphasize, I know that Dan has also told me a story about somebody that learned the Qigong exercises from one of Chen Tinghong's students.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was another teacher actually, and he had somebody jump on his stomach, and then he was bleeding out of holes that he shouldn't bleed out of.
Yeah.
And he went, and I think he went to Chen Tinghong, and Chen Tinghong said, "Who did you learn it from?"
Yeah.
And then he had another student teach him the exercise to aid in his recovery, in fact.
Yeah, because
Chen
Tinghong told this guy that the one he had learned it from hadn't had correction for 40 years, right?
Yes.
So he was just charging a lot of money. And this guy came from another style, he came from Yang style, to learn these exercises. And I think he was teaching all of the exercises in one time, once.
In one go, yes.
In one go. And you know what? You don't do that. You learn, there's 24, you learn 4 at a time, not 24. So yeah, even though he's a Chen Tinghong student, you can't be sure of anything.
Indeed. You teach pushing hands. Can you give your thoughts about this practice?
We have 8 pushing hands exercises, and then the free pushing hands. I think pushing hands, I love pushing hands. Pushing hands for me is, like I said to the companies, it's like a discussion. It will never end. It's about using the other or the opponent's or the partner's force against himself. It's about turning, it's about listening, it's about changing. Everything changes in the world. Everything changes around you. Everything, right? And if you don't change with it or make some changes yourself, you will die. You will suddenly wake up and say, hey, what happened here? Right, so there's 3 kind of people: the one who makes the changes, the one who sees the changes and changes, and the last one who suddenly say, "Hey, what was this? What happened?" Right, we want to be in the 2 first categories. Right, so some pushing hands. When you do the pushing hands, so it's about listening. It's about noticing changes. It's about changing. His force against himself always. Pushing hands is a very good exercise to improve your close quarter your combat skills, you're in close quarter.
And pushing hands is done both in class and in competitions. Do your students enter competitions, and what are your views on competing?
Well, I've always been a competitor. I always want to be number one. I don't win a silver, I lose a gold. If that's how I see it. So, I've been competing in Tai Chi since 1992. British Open, Dutch Open, several other competitions. And I actually was the organizer of 5 competitions in Denmark. 3 Danish Open, 1 European Championships, and 1 Scandinavian Open. And several of my students have competed and won a lot of competitions around Europe. I think competitions for Tai Chi is good and bad. Like more things, there's for and against. The good thing is if you go to a competition, will you train harder? Yes, probably. Will you go and ask your teacher more questions? Yes. Will your teacher give you more corrections? Yes. So another thing is when I went to this competition, I saw other styles. I was comparing and see they did it and they did. Are we doing this way, they're doing that way. So when I came to my teacher next time, I had a lot of questions. So actually, I recommend my students go out and compete, go out and see competition, go out to events, see what they're doing, come to me, ask me questions. Competitions, the one who are winning a competition, if you go to the European Championship, and you win the hand form in there, are you then the best in Europe? Probably not. But you are the best on that day and that moment with those judges, with this group you were competing against. That's the only thing you can say. If you are doing the next day, maybe you get 3rd or 4th or 5th. So just because you won European Championship, don't think you're the best in Europe. If you think that's the bad thing about competition, if somebody's going and say, "Hi, I'm the European champion, I'm the best," that's not the case.
Yeah, and that's also a common misunderstanding about if you tell somebody as well.
Yeah, because there are so many instructors who are not competing, right? And there are also students who actually are better, but they are not competing. So the only thing you can say, you won that competition that day with these judges against these people. But competition is good, and it's meant to be. It's going to improve the level in pushing hands, because when you're doing pushing hands, for example, you're doing it in the class, you're doing it with the fellow students, you're doing with those who you know, right? If you want to see if your pushing hand skills is working properly, you need to go out and push hands with somebody else, somebody you don't know. Go in a competition, because then you're going against people who wants to win, right? In a class, yeah, you want to win, but not at any cost in competition. If I'm going in competition, I want to win. But often I go into open class, right? And the weight that can be there from 90 kilo up to 120, 30 kilo. If I go there, I have to use the proper principle. I have to use the skills. If I go in and use muscle power, I will lose. So if you want to see if your pushing hand skills works, join a competition, not just one. Several.
One other thing that I might mention for competitions, at least in Europe, is another positive aspect is you get to meet people.
And actually, the next European Championship is here from the 6th to the 9th November in Sweden. You can see that on the TCFE website.
You heard it here, but maybe not first. moving on from pushing hands, what weapons are taught?
We have the three traditional Chinese weapons, Tai Chi weapons, the saber, the sword, and the spear. And these are the weapons. We train the forms. We have three forms, and we train the applications with the weapons, and we have some partner exercises with weapons. For this, in the organization in Denmark, we have the main style is Wudang Tai Chi Chuan, and here are that's the three weapons. And then we have an extra weapon. Actually, 1.5 years ago, I went to Hong Kong and learned the Tai Chi Kung Fu Fan Form, which I never thought I was going to learn, but then again, yeah. And so this is the new weapon, if you can call it that, in the organization in Denmark. And actually, I think this form is very practical. It's very soft, it's hard, it's martial, it's fast, it's slow, it's changing a lot, and it's long. So it's a good fan form.
Do you have any personal goals in Tai Chi?
Well,
in life, if you prefer.
In life, yeah. In 1995, my teacher was visiting me in Denmark, and we were sitting out in a garden at my place, and he said to me, "Tom, you can be one of the best in the world." Oh, so why? Yeah, different things, the talents, so also because you ask questions, you think about it, you analyze it. And then I thought, okay, my personal goal, I want to be the best in the world. I want to be the best. So I went to more competition and won several competitions. And then I said to myself in 2000, I want to be the best instructor in the world. Can you measure that? Can you find out if you're best? No, that's not the point. I want to be the best. I want to keep on going. I want to be the best. And I know that, especially in Denmark, they say, who do you think you are? Well, I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for me. Because what we're saying in before we go to learn Gong is that don't go, if you go after being number one, maybe you get number two or three. But if you're going to after being number three, you will never get there. So always go after the best. Always go to win. I had a student for the competition, for example. I was winning the competitions, right? He was also joining training as hard as me, but he always got second or third, always. And one day I said to him, "Why are you competing? What's the main thing is? To have fun. You want to win? Yeah, but well, I told him, when I go into competition, I want to win. It's the only thing that matters. I want to win. Number one. That's it. So that's why you are never going to win, because it's not important to you."
Assuming he wasn't entering the same category as you.
He wasn't. No, he wasn't. So after that, he changed. So I really asked him, "Do you want to win?" "Yes." "No." "Okay, then you have to mentally go after that." And then he won. But that's one of my personal goals, to be the best, but or number one, or to be the best at, well, there's a good saying is, I want to be I don't know the English word.
Well, you can say it in Danish first.
Say it in Danish, yeah. I want to be a better example of myself. Always try to be better example of myself. I don't want to be the same as I was yesterday. I want to be better. As a father, as a boyfriend, as a, you know, as well, in anything I want to, I want to be better. That's also when I practice, I want to be better. I want to do the hand form better. I want to focus, not just just go to the day. No, that's one of my goals. And I want to be a better listener. I want to listen even better.
Well, you're certainly aiming high, and I will try and be a better interviewer.
You're doing great.
you're currently in Hong Kong. How are you finding it?
Well, I like to come to Hong Kong. Yeah, the first time I was in Hong Kong was in 2001, where I made the trip with my teacher. We came to Hong Kong and went to Wudang Shan, Wudang Mountain, and stayed there for 2.5 days, and then went to the Shaolin Temple. I went to Jing Jin Hong's place, and then to Macau, and then back to Hong Kong. But then here 1.5 years ago, I came back to Hong Kong. I wasn't looking for a teacher. That was not the goal. Was to see what was going on here. How did this style develop? How is it now? What's the standard now? And that was the trip where I learned the fan form. I was not going to. That was not my goal, but
it wasn't the plan.
Yeah, everything changes, right? And then I really got to know Apuiwa,
mm-hmm.
and also she's an old student of Jing Jin Hong. Very very nice woman, very nice lady. After 6 months in October, I came back, and now I'm here again, March 2008, and I learned a lot of stuff. Found a lot of inspiration and actually ideas of how to develop things and exercises, especially in our system, which we teach as a main style in organization in Denmark. I think that it's like a qigong. It's not so much qigong. Yeah, we have the nei gong and we have some qigong exercises for warm up. But I'm interested in more. So actually this time, my focus has been a lot of qigong exercises. So yeah, I learned a lot of qigong, and it's very interesting. And I'm going back now with a lot of stuff and a lot of work.
Torben, thanks for your time today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You're welcome.
Well, that wraps up this episode. Thanks for listening. Please join me next time for another Tai Chi podcast.